Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast Monthly Album Roundup for the month of August 2024. I'm your host Robert, and it's currently raining right now, which might suck if it knocks out the power, but man am I gonna get a good night's sleep tonight. And with me I have...
I'm just here for the usual bits of something, which is still better than nothing.
And...
Well, maybe it was a good idea to have the show next week instead of this week as fuck.
Yeah, so there was some shifting around in the schedule, as you may notice. Mostly because of some stuff on my end, but seeing how the music industry is currently throwing everything at the wall.
Oh, God.
I mean, it's busy as hell, but it's going to make for a very eventful number 365.
Oh, my God. He's having an eventful milestone episode.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
Officially one episode for every day of the year. Unless it's a leap year, in which case that'll be the one after that. But you get our point. You know, math is weird. But, yeah, here we are. The roundup for August 2024. And it was one of the months of all time. I mean, I think it was definitely, like, a bit more eventful than July, that's for sure. More notable stuff to talk about in the big leagues and some of the more niche stuff. But, might as well, you know, jump into it here. I don't have a whole lot of preamble, so let's get started, of course, by running down what exactly came out in the month of August 2024. Of course, we're gonna start right at the top, literally at the beginning of the month. There was a new album from JPEG Mafia with I Lay Down My Life For You. And then we get into the first actual Friday of the month, August 2nd. Your releases included, unfortunately, a new Smashing Pumpkins album, Agori Mori Mei. There was a collaborative project between Christabel and, of course, David Lynch, the two are frequent collaborators, with Cellophane Memories. If you're really big on TikTok viral rap stars, Young Gravy decided to drop a country record called Serving Country.
Wait, he's doing one too?
Okay, to his credit, that's that. I thought that was a funny album title, but then again, I laugh at stupid bullshit all the time.
I was like, I'm gonna focus on country this year. That aren't roots of country.
Plot twist: Mark goes country. That is why I sent the cowboy hat to your house that one week.
Okay. If we're doing that, okay, if you're doing that, give me Central Simpson then. Let me clap with him.
Anyway, there was a new project from Killer Mike and the Mighty Midnight Revival with Songs for Sinners and Saints. There was a new album from Khalid with Sincere. And there was a new EP from Maren Morris with Intermission. Then we move on to August 9th, 2024. Your new releases include, unfortunately, a new Mushroomhead project called The Devil. A new album for the band Fucked Up with Another Day. 4 Years Strong dropping a new album, Analysis Paralysis. From rapper Polo G, the album Hood Poet. From Lotto, we have Sugar Honey Iced Tea. Ha, ha, ha.
Ha, ha.
From Benny the Butcher and Black Soprano Family, we have the album Summertime Butch. If you're into Larry June, he had a new project out, Doing It For Me. Logic, dropping a new album titled Ultra 85. From King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, there was the album Flight B741. From Biba Doobie, we had the album This Is How Tomorrow Moves. From Lewis Cole and the Metropole Orchestre, we had the album Nothing. There was a posthumous recording of a release by Ryuichi Sakamoto called Opus. I'll expand on that much later on. And from J Balvin, there was a new project called Rayo. And then in between those two Fridays, on August 10th, we had a brand new studio album by DJ Sabrina, the teenage DJ, with Hex. Get it? Sabrina? Hex? Heh. Anyway, moving on to August 16th, 2024, your new releases include the newest Dark Tranquility album, Endless Signals. From YG, we had Just Read Up 3. From Foster the People, their new album, Paradise State of Mind. From Tinashe, there was Quantum Baby. And from Post Malone, the country record F1 Trillion. And then, of course, on August 19th, there was a surprise drop from rapper Ka with The Thief Next to Jesus. And August 21st, the newest album from a Japanese singer-songwriter Kenshi Yonezu with Lost Corner. Then moving on to the week of August 23rd, 2024, we had the newest album from Nile with The Underworld Awaits Us All, from Flesh God Apocalypse, an opera album called Opera. From Uniform, we had the album American Standard, Japanese noise rockers Melt Banana dropping their first new album in 11 years with 3 plus 5. From the band Zeal and Ardor, their newest album Grafe. From the band Fontaine's DC, we had their new album Romance. From Muramasa, a new project, Curve 1. From Play That Boy Zay, we had VIP. From Cash Cobain, we had the album Play Cash Cobain. Problem. Sorry, I just wanted to see if that got a reaction out of anyone. God, that song was lame. And, of course, from Sabrina Carpenter, we had the album Short and Sweet. Now we move on to the final Friday here, August 30th, 2024. First up, from Winter Sun, after many, many years of delays and, you know, metal memes and such, they finally decided to put out the album Time 2. From the prog metal band Leprous, we had the album Melodies of Atonement. From deathcore band Oceano, we had the album Living Chaos. We had a new EP from Chelsea Wolfe called Undone. From AWOL Nation, their new album The Phantom 5. From RZA, Colorado Symphony, and Christopher Dragon, we had the album A Ballet Through Mud. From John Legend, we had a new project, My Favorite Dream, and a new record from Zed called Telos. We'll get to you next week. So, yeah, that's about the full rundown. Again, some highs, definitely, like, more going on in July, but now to expand on some of these a bit further. And, of course, as always, we get the ball rolling with Alex.
Okay, well, fair warning, I don't have a lot because August was a particularly rough month for me. I'm not going to trauma dump, you know, people on here, but, yeah, it was not an easy month for me. And when my brain decides to shut down, I sort of don't really pay attention to much of anything, so apologies in advance for my very meager offerings. I will push back my penance for not hitting my 6th album quota next time. You'll see what I mean when we get there, but yeah, I'll just run down some things on here. And also, I will be talking anniversary re-releases when they happen that are of my interest, because I need something to talk about, and fuck it, why not? Can you'll see what I mean here. And in, again, in October, if you've listened to the last show. Oh, also, I'm better. The sickness got out of me after 3 days, so I'm better now.
Cool, cool. Good to know.
Yay.
Yeah. I told you it wasn't going to kill me the second time. Yeah. Okay, anyway, for what I got out of the month of August, Logic, why are you putting out a 20-track album? You know my rule.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, 20 tracks. Sir, this is a Wendy's. Try again later. Yeah. Anyway, for a rap album that wasn't 20 tracks long, JPEG Mafia, I lay down my life for you.
Okay.
Would it be uncouth of me to say this was good, but not quite on the level of LP or Scaring the Hose?
That's fair!
Yeah, because like, there's a weird feeling around this one. One of very deliberate antagonism for reasons that are a little obvious when you basically look outside and, I'm going to pull out my best Mark Grondin impression here. I mean, we can't expect much. After all, it's like Peggy said, all his heroes are cornballs.
True, true.
Yeah.
The album is solid. Again, good, but not on the level of what we've heard in the last, you know, couple years. It's more of what we'd expect. You know, there's Denzel Curry on the track JPEG Ultra, which was fun. Oh, and yes, that Denzel Curry album was very good. I listened to that in July, but yeah, that was good. This is good too, just not quite up to the standard that we've come to expect. Again, maybe it's on purpose, maybe it isn't, but yeah. Still just kind of a weird feeling around it. Okay, some reissues here, because someone's got to talk about them. There was a 20th anniversary reissue of Lamb of God's Ashes of the Wake. I don't have to go over this album any further than anyone should. It's Ashes of the Wake. It is American thrash excellence. You know the songs. You know the singles. This has a health remix of Lazarus, which is fun. I like that. Yeah, it's just... It's on the pinnacle of 2000s era metal albums, along with several, really. Take your pick. Well, now for something a little more talkative from me, and I'll get to why in a moment. I found out, just by looking through my YouTube feed one day in August, a new music video from Creed for the song Are You Ready? From their 1999 album Human Clay. That is how I found out they did a 25th anniversary release of said album, Human Clay. I have a story about this album. So, back when I was living on the West Coast, as a 9-year-old kid, I was a very irregular churchgoer. I'm not going to get into specifics. It was a non-denominational community church, but it was something that me and my family did for a little while. And my stepfather in particular, who got me into heavy music, was really into Creed. I'd ask him why, but he's been dead for 10 years, so I think that kind of wouldn't really work out all that well, because... I don't know. I think the reception up there is a little off.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, getting back on track, this is an album and a band I'm quite familiar with for multiple reasons, both memetic and serious. This is on the more serious side, because this is one of the highest selling rock albums in history. I believe it sold 22 million copies around the world.
Damn.
Yeah, and this was during the era of the music industry basically being head over heels in an exuberant wealth of riches. Anybody could become a star and make a lot of money because you had resources to make money. It was when MTV was still relevant and radio was still relevant. Not to mention CD sales were as high as they've ever been. And this album is proof that just a couple of really big singles can propel an album into the stratosphere. Because the rest of the album, outside of the singles, it's kind of very meh.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It's basically what you'd expect from late 90s post-grunge, just a lot of drop D riffs. That vocal style that we all know and know. It's just very basic songwriting. But it worked. It worked out in a really big way. So, I guess they got the last laugh after all. If you know anybody in their mid-40s, they probably went to that tour over the summer. Just be on the lookout for them. You'll know them when you see them. Yeah, I think the singles are still good. I can still sing every word of Higher by memory. Yes, I'm one of those people. Yeah, aside from the singles, yeah, the rest of the album is just nothing to write home about. It's very basic. kind of a step down from their debut album, honestly. Like, that album had grit to it. This has polish, but with the polish comes the lack of grit. And then Weathered happened, and we never speak of that album ever again.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Story for another day, but moving on. Now, this album I just put on here because I figured, what the hell, why not? And I have purposefully avoided everything about this just so I could say, here, I listened to the new Big Pop album of the month for this. Sabrina Carpenter, Short and Sweet.
Oh, yeah, I've been wondering what the deal with that is.
I'm wondering, too. And after having listened to it, I can tell you confidently and with, you know, proper internalization of everything on the album, it is fine. It is a fine 6.5 out of 10 pop album.
It is one of the albums of all time, you say?
Yeah.
Someone's there.
Yeah, and in the same year that we've gotten Cowboy Carter, Hit Me Hard and Soft, and Brat, fine just doesn't really cut it. But, like, this album will find an audience, even though it kind of feels like a very weird mix of styles. Namely, I would say Sabrina Carpenter's approach on this album is a mix between Kacey Musgraves and Ariana Grande. Very country-infused, polished pop. But, yeah, for me, like, I've got Billie Eilish and Charlie XCX this year, and I'd rather take them than this. Like, the bulk of the album is you know, it's okay, it's serviceable, it gets the job done, but the singles are arguably the weakest part of the entire album. Please, Please, Please has the rhyme of another with motherfucker, which is a very high-ranking entry in the Whack Rhymes Hall of Fame.
Damn.
And as far as Espresso goes, no.
Oh.
Just no. Like, this is a really bad song with really terrible lyrics. Just no.
But it's Song of the Summer.
No. The quote-unquote Song of the Summer is that one Post Malone and Morgan Wallen song that nobody listened to.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But we all know what the real Song of the Summer is, because Kendrick's riding it all the way to the Super Bowl. More on that next time.
They're not like us.
Utterly
diabolical. They're not like us. They're not like us.
In fact, let me just take a look. How are those new Drake songs charting right now? Oh my god, bottom 60.
Wait, there's new Drake songs?
Apparently.
Yeah, and they're not charting. At all.
Oh my.
Round two, they say. Yeah. Whatever.
Round two!
So yeah, there's your pop album review here. But I have one more album here that I'll be very short and sweet on, because the album itself is like 25 minutes long. Melt Banana, 3+5.
Nice.
I'm not sure what I was expecting, but in a way, to me, this sounds like what 100 Gex sounds like to people who like 100 Gex. Which means something, I'm sure. I'm not sure what it means totally yet. But this is wild. I don't know if I can call this post-rock, post-metal, hyper-pop, all of the above. There's some weird stuff on here. Very weird guitar pitch shifting rips everywhere. An odd vocal delivery that somehow still works. This is a manic, wild trip of an album, and I really like it. I'm sure that says a lot more about me than it does them, but hey, I'm a weird guy who likes weird things. In fact, at the last wrestling pay-per-view I watched over the weekend, I saw Shoot Murder! And it was fantastic. No, I will not give you context. Look it up yourself. But Yeah, that's about all I've got. I will pay my penance for not hitting my quota next time, and that's going to not be fun.
Oh boy, we'll have the emergency drinks on standby. But yeah, good way to get the ball rolling. So now we move on to the next section, which is, of course, Mark's Domain.
Okay, well, this month I have about mostly seven. Yeah, just seven, which... Right, that's a healthy amount, because this one I'm going to talk to you about, I'm going to save that one for last. Because the first six is, well, straight up hip-hop, so yeah, Now, yeah, another first we're talking about is, well, yeah, we're going to talk about JPEG Mafia with I Laid My Life Down For You. And these were the only one of the listen to this. So, yeah, I guess you're wondering, at first I was hesitant because, like, I mean, I know you're thinking, like, last year, Scaring the Hoes was my favorite album of the year, number one. And, of course, start this year, he went from Scaring the Hoes to do something that actually did scare the hoes.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, which people did, yeah, then they kind of like, you're really teaming up with him, even though, okay, yeah, it's like something that this year, even though, there's a lot of motherfuckers that worked on that album. Some dudes you know, some artists you know, but you know what, whatever. Like, I know, like, yes, I know JPEG said that Kanye's his big influence, work with him, seemed like a dream come true for him. You do know, have you seen him right now? It's like, maybe if he was 14, like, oh, what about a dream come true, but now you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, it's like, you know, I'm doing this, and that's like, yes, it is, it's good, it's not on the level of LP or Scaring the Hoes, but it is good. Like, I like how the first track, which titled, I Screamed This in My Mirror before I Have Anyone, where the first line goes this, if I was an NBA player, I'd be dealing books, but worse. And that's, it never had... If I look every time rappers represent doing book reference, I have two nickels. that happen twice in a year.
Context: Dylan Brooks is an obnoxious scrub.
And you know what? Whoever said it, you did that reference first, just in case you didn't get the reference. Anyway, also third verse where this lyric where he says. I hate when niggas be stressing about what you be doing more than they worry about what their own shit. I hate when these bitches be begging your boys for some cash and then turn around and say, eat the rich. They get mad when niggas do it for themselves because their parents are still chipping in. Oh, get mad, your bitch play, follow the leader because you're following your bitch, huh? The underground filled with my Gohans, the niggas be scamming on GoFunds. Okay, I mean, I can say, okay, alright, that's a good set of bars here. I will say on this album, he did take some shots at people, like, at first, he takes some shots at Drake, which, I mean, it's nothing new, because at this point, everybody's taking the shots at Drake. Because they call him a private school rapper, that's on the track, It's Dark and Hell is Hot, which is a DMX reference. And that's fitting, considering X is alive, he said that he wasn't fond of Drake himself, he said in the interview. I had noticed some Brazilian funk shit in there, which kind of like, that kind of trippy. And he did some of the opium rappers, you know, people like Destroy Lonely, Purple Car, whatever they are, but they weren't that special. That rapper being Freddie Gibbs. That's another case of, well, rappers I like dissing each other. Well, JPEG, you ever sit between being the butcher and maybe Currency? Maybe Larry June. I don't know what's going on with Freddy this motherfucker. It's just like, he's also Freddy on JPEG Ultra Denzel Creek, which is great. And some of them were quite damning, considering, like, there's one time when people call Freddy Gibbs Freddy Gibbs for reasons, which. Although apparently both of them had some beef around the time when Freddie was doing some moves during JPEG's LP era. And well, Yeah, and well, I mean, it also shows them on the track "I'll Be Right There," the song that the track that samples that classic Jay song "Don't Walk Away." You know, when it goes, "I'll be right there," or something like that. You hear it. You hear it. You know it. Within that song, and of course, you hear the track "Ex-Military." No, you do not. No, you do not hear Griff on this album. Just saying. So yeah, that's something. I do like the track "No New Black History" Ben Staples, and I gotta say, hey, we got Big Fish Theory Ben Staples on here. Sounds like something you would hear on an album like that. Considering, well, Flume co-produced this, and considering Flume worked with both JPEG and Vince, I mean, sometimes I'm like, this sounds like something that would have been on a Flume album or Ben Staples. Like, this is actually it's a damn good track. Like I just thought, yes, this is the mistake that I've been kind of wanting to hear all the time. Like, don't get me wrong, the album was good, but it's the shit I'd be liking from him. And of course, like, on the latter half of this album, there's a pair of dudes with, you know, apparently Peggy's going to do some shit. At least when we get from the latter half, like, on the track, either on or off the drugs, Balance Aid of Demons, getting the shit together, which, okay. And then there's Don't Put Anything on the Bible, which, like, you heard the album preview. There was a video, the preview of that song, which it sounds, I think, that sounds kind of heavenly. And it got vocals from a singer named Buzzy Lee, aka the daughter of Steven Spielberg. Yes, that guy.
Huh.
Yeah, which, and that's something to do with depression, and I guess I've recovered from, and let's say I've recovered from this, which, okay, let's say, I'm just gonna say what he's going to this. He's going to some shit, which, we'll give it this year for him. It's like, or I don't know, guess things that we don't know from him. Okay, yeah. So yeah, again, I was hesitant to look at this album because of the whole thing. I still went into it, and while I say that it's a good project, it's one of my favorites. No, but I will say it isn't listening to, and I'll just say this: if you're somebody that likes Kanye and got sick of his shit, and you want something somebody similar to that, JPEG's right there. Hell, come to think of it, Charles Gambino was doing that shit too. It's right there too. Or even Channel Trey ass, or basically people who do shit like him, but better and not as, well, you know, not as controversial as the other guy is, but yeah. Speaking of, speaking of rappers who beef with Freddie Gibbs, being the Butcher in Black Soprano Family with the album Summertime Butch, and I'm gonna say this is slightly better than his Def Jam debut a few months back. Like, the album was, like, I thought the album was okay, but that one shot, which was to be mainstream, it was supposed to be produced by both Hit-Boy and Alchemist, even though it was my favorite from them producing it down on that one big hit album that I was to a few months back. This one, like, he's almost back to Paramount Family shit, and the album is, besides being, like, 10 tracks of 24 minutes, although I say you do get like some skits here, like some skits here and there, so it was really, you know, it's a short album. Like, this one is more, you know, it's really Grammy roots with hard hitting beats and interludes here and there, a little there. Like, the whole project is like he got tracks like Kitchen Table, Ray Moon, Blue Building, were sort of dope. Which I thought, this was an okay track. I mean, they hit harder. I will comment, he did an EP following this with Buffalo Bush Volume 1. He jumped a couple weeks after this. It's 3 tracks. But technically, it was 2, but the thing is, he had tracks featuring, like, 30X Splash, Fabulous. He had one track that featured Drake, but I guess he was trying to get his Drake stimulus patches, but that didn't work. And it was taken off streaming for some reason. I don't know what happened, but I guess that happened. But yeah, this being the Butcher project was, you know, it was decent. Then there's Larry June doing it for me. So yeah, I mean, so many thinking almost like Larry Drew now, considering like his last album, well, The Great Escape with the Alchemist. He did an album, you know, around November last November called The Night Shift of Cardo, which all enough to have to check out The Great Escape of Alchemist on there, rapping on there. But that one was fine. But this was like a soul Larry June project. And my father saw, I ain't got much to say on here. Like, he's rapping on his usual shit that be either, you know, trying to get the bag, buying the lavish shit he wants with the bag, all those luxurious lavish beats from people like Cardo, Jake One, Harry Fraud, and DJ Khalil, like a bunch of producers that are unknown to me. And you wonder, do you hear the Alchemist? No, I don't hear the Alchemist. It's not on this record. He might be busy. He might be busy doing records for somebody else. And NPR, NFR, I saw you, I was like, he's a bunch of Big Sean of all people, which I have to check out a Big Sean out soon, but anyway, like, this type of thing that is basically his bread and butter. His consistency, his rhyme is okay, the music is solid, I'm gonna say, but your type of guy likes the life of his music, then, alright Dennis, the right Dennis, all for you. Then we have Play That Boy Zay, VIP, you know, the guy that you often hear when Denzel Curry is rapping. And I forgot about this. He also collabed with Health on their Disco 4 Part 2 album, which that just occurred to me. Which, Okay, and I will say, this album is on. It ain't too shabby. Like, it is like that collection of horrorcore menacing banger shit, like that got from, you know, from Denzel Curry's last project, which, by the way, Hoodlum's the one he did with that guy Ace and Rocky's on there, which you heard, which you probably heard that before, which, yeah, like, something like it's probably something you may have heard, like, probably the stuff they heard from Curry or J. McMahon's music, which both on the album one of his features as well. But I'll say this as short. I mean, it slaps. Like, I can say, okay, this guy got some good shit going on. I can definitely bow to this shit. But yeah. All right, now we got the Logic Ultra 85. You know that one? You know that long ass album? Which, yeah, Alex, right? This album is fucking long. It's like 20 tracks, and I want to say the Wave Fright. Hold up, let me check the length, right?
It's, yeah, I think it's like 77 out.
Like almost 80, like 77 minutes. That's, yeah.
And like almost an hour 20.
Yeah. But I will say this is actually one of his better albums. Like, usually Logic is albums, like, something because, like, it'd be like, either this one's good, or this one, this one's good, this one, it's the one that's like, oh, this one's kind of good. You know what I mean? Good, like, probably was entertaining. I heard him, since No Pressure. And Radio Cable 2 Story, which, well, we're speaking of that, too, that album, which, with, yes, the voice at the nerd got to be, yes, the voice nerd, yes, you know, skits, which, oh, shit, Steve Blum. Which, oh, shit, I'm like this one.
Captain Quinton Thomas is back.
Yes. Yes. I will say, like, I know people often when it comes to skits, people are like, I don't know, but the skits are the thing that I enjoy of the album. Like, it's just like just doing that shit. Plus, I mean, plus it's fucking Steve Blum. What the Steve Blum? You want to hear Steve Blum? I don't know. Like, I don't know. I'll save you the paper. Read ingredients of a Hot Pocket. And of course, for Logic, all the stuff, you know, you rap about, like, you know, stuff like mental health, saying truly get stuff, anxiety, you know, the bullshit always talk about people, positivity and all that shit. Like, can it be a bit cheesy? Yeah, but it's kind of more earnest in a way. Like, it's more, you know, true to himself. Like, that being, at least to him, since he's actually doing shit on his own, you know, on his own label, his own everything, which that must be nice. And of course, that's just kind of nice, crazy of his, of his boy Six. Okay, and there'd be some good checks, in retrospect, I kind of like. Okay, and finally, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is a Tarantino movie. I mean, mine's Jackie Brown, but okay. But he's his own. And yes, yes, people, I like Jackie Brown. That's the best one of his catalog, all right? Now, like I said, the album is long as hell. I will say, the first part felt kind of long. Like the middle half did kind of went through smoothly, at least to me. But the last couple of tracks kind of show its length during the last three to four tracks. So I say this album product is actually kind of okay. It's actually kind of good. I probably may listen to it again, but yeah, it's a good project. All right, next up, Car, The Thief Next to Jesus. Oh, looky, I'm doing a Car album, in which the shit not on streaming yet. I actually bought the fucking album. Yes, yes, I actually bought the album, $20. Listen to it on my phone, because it was on my phone, and all I can say is, okay, like, the album feels like a spiritual sequel to his 2020 album, The Sins of Cain, which the album has this, you know, spiritual religion theme, mostly Christianity and the Black Church, telling his own life experience. Like, on the track, Bread, Wine, Body, Blood, he goes on a rap about substance and wants people not to be the weapon they use to harm you. On the other hand, it could be conceived as preachy and corny, but as Car delivery, it works in a way that doesn't talk down to the audience, which works for me, because I actually like the fact that, it goes, you know, it's pussy this, ass that, all that shit's trash rap, without the power, man, I'm feeling out, it's past that, yes, I'm a sick expression, if any, trying to lash back, it's proper prostitution, always asking for the cash that, you sure you're selling me melody, telling me your ass fat, or you just suck it, bitch. Want to suck us to the stash tab? Do the twist out like a pretty miss for the fast gat. Like, he's like, the thing is, like, about this, because, like, he ain't been condescending. He's basically saying, like, as stoke as he is, like, nothing on a fat ass. Like, I don't like that shit, but just make sure the rapper's good, not just trash, or you know, like that. Like, if you heard of Cotton before, that's about a biblical life story through the lens of Christianity and associated with how Black people often depend on the church, how, you know, for reclamation, how religion associated itself with violent segregation, acts of horror, slavery, all that shit. Especially with the organ piano sounds and the gospel samples get this ominous and bleak tone that actually makes, you know, make a Cotton, like, I mean, I say, like, you do get that bleak tone that does work. And it does work, like, tracks like Beautiful, Testimony, Broken Rose, Broken Rose Window, and God Undefeated, some of the best highs of this one. Like I said, it's worth checking out. If you have the money for it. Like, you can't, like, if you can't for budget reasons, I understand. Guess you're going to hit streaming eventually and decide for yourself. You got the money, just go for it. All I'm saying is that if you're listening to this right now and wondering about the playlist, yeah, that's the reason why you don't see any tracks on the year, because, you know, not streaming yet.
Yeah.
Okay, and now get to the final album, the one that I've anticipated in a month long. Because it's release, Lewis Cole with the Metropole Orchestra and Jules Buckley with Nothing. Yep. Of course. Okay, I know that my first time talking about this guy. Of course, people know. Of course, I mean, we know him at first because, well, that's just with Thundercat. Also, I love Lewis Cole. It's like, oh, that's Lewis. And given that he signed the Brain Feeder, which, okay, that makes more sense now.
Yes, it does.
And apparently he's super inspiration to follow when he was working on Flamagra, which, okay. And he been doing a lot of ventures, like he's gonna have for the jazz funk trying to a clowning clown core with a guy named Stan Grendel and another duo called Nowhere with singer songwriter Genevieve Artadi, who's also on this album as well. both them to sing it with, you know, with other people. Now, of course, Metropole Orchestra, this jazz pop hybrid orchestra present about 52 to 97 musicians, which that's a lot of motherfuckers. And yeah, and I'll say with this album, again, at first, I didn't jump the gun yet, but this is my favorite album of 2024 so far. This gave me a good experience. I fucking love this album. Like, in fact, I can say, like, it was an amazing experience going this album in full. Like, from front to back, the album feels like an entire movie score. Like, given that, you know, it's from an orchestra, you can make the case with that intro,
Ludovici Cole Est Frigis.
That song with the church organ, the strings, and the atmosphere got this very haunting and eerie sound. I'm fucking with this. Like interesting to work around. Like, of course, things fall apart. You get one where it's very bombastic with the bass, trumpets, and the horns. It does even more to pop sound things, often like high energy and low, and yet ending on a lonely coming sound. Same with life, brought it back up. Like, I often say, this sounds like a movie score. It also sounds like a video game score, which is lovely. Plus, in life, you get the Phantom of the Mighty saxophone. Yes, though. You also get all peasants had this lovely calm with the strings and the horns. So lovely and calm. And then Crucifer P, that's a big highlight. It has this throwback big band swing sound. So that's really kind of catchy. Makes you snap your fingers. It sounds like something that you would have heard. This big swing sound, like, you would use on a montage. It's not something you would have used on a close shot of a montage. Like, the horns, the strings, the vocals. Like, in piano solo from Jacob Band's Nice Touch, we just said, I'm on, bitch, no position switch. I cannot do the voice well. the thing is, it sounds great. I love Appeal on the Sea. That's one of my favorite tracks on there. Because the song feels like another song, Social with Cold Call, It's All Nothing Till It's Everything by Nowhere, which, yes, the same singer, Genevieve Artita, who also does vocals here, which does have similar, like, both songs are good, and this one has, like, you have this very menacing beginning and different, so, but the drumming is different, and look at the keyboard solo by Rye Thistle-Twite. Damn, I can't. Yeah. Of course, there's also the tracks Who Cares, one and two. One, and the beginning of two had this very, light, breezy, fun, vibe going on, who cares? The second part, when we get to the end part of that, it sounds like Final Boss and Pending Doom music. what the fuck is happening? it sounds like music that has, the big villain reveal. Imagine, let's say it plays when y'all heard about the news about Oasis. Imagine that playing.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it fits. That took me by surprise. Also, know what? What's the front reminds me of, for some reason, Wilson Dungeon, for some reason. I don't know why, where's the funk, Wilson Dungeon, I don't know. Wizards and magic and shit.
Can't wait for season two.
Yep. Right. And then there's weird moments where they had this very 8-bit S sound that used on the trombones and horns. Like, High Files got some vocals from Cole and Genevieve as simple as short. Like, this had the common, that sweet coming spot. And then we got this piece, which is Shallow Laughter and Bitches Orchestral Version. First of all, Shallow Laughter has Cole, going full set on the violins and strings. And then If you heard the song, like, if you listen to the album Quality Over Opinion, you heard the song Bitches on there, which that's my favorite track, song on the album. I mean, I'm not gonna think which person is better, but conversely, like, I'll take it. I'll take it. Like, really wild little track in the first place, like, the drums, the intensity, the guitar, the saxophone, everything about 10 times more. And I feel like, it's just wild, and I love it. Also, Let It Happen, which is original, Let It Happen, also version from Quality Over Opinion, which I never, think too much of that, but it sounds good to, like, I don't know why, the way, like, near the end, feels like something I want to, if the end is, like, the way the end is as well, it feels something you would have heard the end after a Christmas special or something. I don't know why it just sounds like, or something like that. At least that's what I think about it. And then there's Doesn't Matter, the penultimate 11-minute track, which, this is something that you kind of was to, like, drive it alone, which had this very haunting and eerie feeling, makes you wonder about a lot of things. The build-up with the invitation just so high, like, this is just fucking haunting. Like hearing the song, listen to the video of that, which is basically, you know, driving down a road, or dirt road, which is like, oh shit, like, it's just making you think about a lot of things going back and forth, like the way it flows, his rotation, it's too beautiful, everything about this album is just too beautiful for me, it's too beautiful, like, there's nothing I hate about this album, like, I'm out with Lewis Cool David Orchestration, you know, with the instrumentation, the vocals, the fact there's an orchestra behind all this, and the way it sounds, something you would hear from a movie or a video game or, I don't know, like, it's, to me, like, I don't want to sound like that guy, but this is just pure art right here. Like, between this and Justice, I'm like, okay, these two things might fight for the top spot of my album of the year, and yeah, like, everybody did their thing, from Lewis Cole, to the orchestra, Juice Buckley, to everybody from the Mental Core Orchestra, because there's a lot more focus on this. Like, it's an amazing project from front to back. I just love it. Like, I'm just gonna say, like, I'm pretty sure this could be my album of the year. Like, by December, don't be surprised if I say this is my number one. Like, if something else changes, then I don't know. But right now, it's great. I love it. It's fantastic.
Nice. Now time to wrap up this stuff on my end by running down a bunch of albums. As always, I'm going to start with the ones that are my top picks for the past month. So, let's go ahead and start with Logic's Ultra 85. Honestly, I didn't even realize he was going to have new material this year, or that it was going to bring back Steve Bloom and the whole incredible true story sci-fi concept. Logic. A man whose career has had more ups and downs than my heart rate after too much Taco Bell. Some solid highs, but when that pan hits a low, it's really low. Jeez.
Yeah.
Of course, now we're in this post, air quotes, retirement phase, which has produced, like, about, what, like, three or four, like, records or tapes and stuff. This one in particular. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that, and, you know, he didn't get out with Def Jam. He's doing his own thing.
Yeah, this is, like, I think his second record since leaving Def Jam, but I am, in fact, happy to also confirm that it is, in fact, very good. Probably one of the best projects the man's put out in a long-ass time. Mostly because it's honestly the most, like, inspired and overall dignified that he sounded on a record without feeling like he's half-assing anything. I mean, how could he? The album literally opens on a beefy 9-minute track called Paul Rodriguez, which sets the tone and feels like it justifies every second. This great jazzy boom-bap beat, flowing his ass off, dropping the kind of bars you'd expect from his love of, you know, hip-hop as a genre, the usual braggadocio, nerd culture references to stuff like Metal Gear Solid and Batman, and Anthony Fantano, who, by the way, I should point out, whipped out the yellow flannel for the review of this album, which I don't think he's done for a Logic record since either No Pressure or The Incredible True Story.
Yeah.
Of Of course, it's a great opener, but of course, if you think it's just braggadocio, it's worth pointing out that the rest of the album also delves into more lyrical nuance, basically about like his mental health struggles on songs like Interstellar, how his evolving career and, you know, being a dad and stuff has made him rethink, you know, what exactly is it that matters in his life in terms of, you know, personal fulfillment or his career and all that. Of course, the production is all that, as he says again in Paul Rodriguez, that great like lo-fi boom bap shit, like with the flutes on Favela, or the groovy bass and DJ scratches on Gardens 3, a song that I would like to point out name drops my boy, Vash the Stampede. Of course, all the Tarantino loving on songs like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And yeah, just overall, he really does sound like he was just like in top form with like, you know, the pen and the paper and just the flow in general, really like honing in on what makes his style work to make for a pretty damn good record. And yeah, all the fucking spaceship banner stuff is pretty funny, trying to kill time out there in the stars and all. So, good on you, Logic. Ultra 85 indeed. Now, moving on to the next record here. Of course, Melt Bananas 3 plus 5. For me, one of the more highly anticipated records of the month and pretty much the year. I mean, Jesus Christ, 11 years since that last record, Fetch. I forgot how I first found out about them. I think a friend of mine in college might have told me about them, but either way, I got pretty into them in the intervening years. I've even seen them live twice, and they absolutely slap. Fun fact, one of those was opening for Napalm Death. That's an interesting pairing. But of course, in the intervening years, and of course all across their career, they've done contributions to stuff like, say, Perfect Hair Forever, or Ninja Slayer from Animation. And now here we are with 3 plus 5, this actually being the band's second studio album as a duo, with Fetch being the first where they kind of abandoned having like a actual backing band in favor of drum machines and, you know, artificial bass and stuff. And a lot of that style is carried over thoroughly on here, having pretty much not skipped the beat at all. I mean, the opening track Code gives you tons of this cacophony of distorted amp feedback, synthetic guitars and squealing, segueing into frenetic noodling. Of course, Yasuko Onuki's very distinctive vocal yelping. It all sets the tone very nicely, eventually giving us a nice driving groove with the noisy synthetic soundscapes just sort of exploding out into your ear holes and such. And it's a pretty good start for, you know, what's a pretty succinct 24-minute record. Plenty of those computerized blaring bleeps and blips, twinkling over top grinding, blasting synthetic drums and bass, and guitars that sound like a machine constantly trying to rev and start up and all. The very hardcore grinding energy and spark is still there, whether it be songs like Stopgap with the kind of shifts between halftime and double time beats and grooves, the sweeping synthetic leads on Scar, the tremolos on Flipside. There's some groovier, more melodic pockets there, like Whisper, a song that's got like some sweeping harmonic leads and all, but it's all still going to very thoroughly assault your senses. And I do want to give a special shout out to a song on the album called Case D, which the band actually first released back in 2016 under the title of Case D in the Test Tube, specifically on the Noise compilation from none other than Adult Swim. So the long con is being played here. Kind of like how that also had a clipping song that eventually ended up on Visions of Bodies Being Burned. Long cons. Overall, it's very short, sweet, and to the point. It will absolutely blow out your ears and your speakers in all the ways you want out of some really fantastic noise rock. Now, moving on to the next record here. I am also going to touch on the works of Mr. Ludovici Cole here. So, again, outside of that one, so for me at least, outside of that one Thundertrack song, Thundercat, I was trying to say Thundercat track, Jesus, I gotta learn to speak. I had never actually listened to Cole's music up until this album cycle, although I did make sure to do my due diligence in checking out the back catalog, to which I could say, I can see why Thundercat is big on this guy and why Brainfeeder picked him up. In a way, you could say his vibe is pretty much the Thundercat of drums. A heavy focus on jazz, funk, and R&B stylings, but with a very lyrically stupid, snarky sense of humor about things. I mean, when you're writing songs like Failing in a Cool Way and Park Your Car on My Face. And of course here, the backing of the Metropole Orchestra to help flesh things out. What stands out immediately to me is just how, well, they just immediately, like, click in with Cole's own creative instincts. Like, the first actual proper song, Things Will Fall Apart, has this very shuffling, funky triplet groove that's accentuated pretty well by that syncopated set of horn lines playing right into the drum rhythm, the way the strings play off of Cole's vocal melodies, eventually giving us plenty more dramatic horn action and string stabs, which are kind of bright in comparison to the relatively more bleak tone of the lyrics and all. Life in particular definitely sounds like some peak Brain Feeder, in particular with the, again, with the string stabs, the aggressively staccato bass line, the equally staccato synth backing, and even one of the funnier lyrics on the record, fucking wet as Neptune's ass. Then, of course, cruising away from the funk, we have Cruisin' for P, which has like that classic Hollywood big band swing to it. Although I do wonder what the P could possibly stand for, who knows. And I do, of course, really love the aggressively saturated bass syncopation on A Pill in the Sea, the way it starts off very menacing and then builds up to that very angelic melodic chorus, while still maintaining a lot of that fast-paced energy. And I do have to point out how funny it is that, yes, we get an orchestral rendition of a prior song called Bitches, where the only lyric is indeed... Bitches. I have to wonder how that meeting went with the fucking orchestra. Like, okay, so we got this song. I need you to do an arrangement. The only lyric is bitches.
Bitches. You want to say what?
You heard me. I said bitches. But no, yeah, this album is fucking fantastic. Easily one of the most immaculately composed records of the year. Everything just works so perfectly in perfect, funky symphonic harmony, and once more for the road, bitches. All right, now let's move on to what for me is one of the harder ones to kind of wrap my heads around. I mean, it is interesting to think about, but it certainly gives you a lot to think about. The New Zealand Ardor record, Graif. As some of you may recall, back in 2022, I placed the band's self-titled album as my favorite album of the year. And I can safely say I still stand by that. That record, to me, is kind of the most perfectly constructed version of the quintessential Zealand Ardor sound. That very spiritual, bluesy, aggressive, extreme metal style. So, naturally, I suppose I shouldn't be surprised that this one kind of feels like it's quite a swerve from that peak. For a bit of context, all of the band's records up to now have mainly just been frontman Manuel Gagneau? Actually, I haven't heard it pronounced, but anyway. He handles the majority of the instrumentation of vocals, the only outside contribution being Marco von Allman on the drums. However, he has always had a live lineup, and this is in fact the first studio album to feature the full band lineup on a record. And I wouldn't be surprised if that songwriting and contribution is the reason for some of the more, like, experimental sounds on this one. Starting with the album opener, The Bird, The Lion, and The Wildkin, with its whistling melodies and marching band drums and all. That whistling melody, by the way, does come up quite a bit here and there as kind of like a recurring motif. A leitmotif, as I believe they say. Then going to the track Fend You Off, we have these slower guitar passages and this very twinkling chime melody combined with relatively more consistently melodic vocals from Manuel himself. Kila Nova has something of a funkier groove to it with, and while there are some heavier menacing sections in there with some of the harder hitting drums and these subtle guitar tremolos, it still feels like it hews pretty close to a melodic feel. And I think that side in particular kind of gives you a good sense of what it is this album is doing that's so distinct upon itself and from the rest of the catalog. It is easily the most melodic and kind of mellow record the band has done by comparison. Now, don't get me wrong, there are still a lot of the heavier bits in there, like the song Clawing Out with its heavy triplet grooves and its really eerie off-kilter blaring synths. Hide and Shade, which is easily the most quintessential Zealand Ardor song on the record, and again, one that calls back to that melody established on the opening track, or Thrill, which kind of has some bouncier grooves to it, but is still very, like, you know, heavy. But the album definitely feels like it's trying to be more bright in how it constructs its melodies, like, say, the track Are You the Only One Now, which is driven by this clean melodic guitar strumming, some tambourine accentuated drum passages and plenty of la la la's in the vocals and all. It does sound pretty good though, all things considered. But there's also songs like Disease, which kind of has like these more scattershot guitars and this very steady groove of the drum and bass, or the song Une Vie Vide, which is this more full-on synth interlude. Like I said, it throws more at you in terms of melodic experimentation and more synthetic production ticks. It's a good record. It's a very interesting swing for the fences. I'm still going to have to chew this one over and see how I feel about it in the grand scheme of things. And now for my last of the top picks here. So at the end of last year, the last album that I listened to in 2023, I gave a listen to an album called Destiny from a producer named DJ Sabrina the Teenage DJ, who was based out of London. And I gotta be honest, I really quite dug the album as kind of like this 4-hour odyssey through like basically the stylistic greatest hits of club dance music and all. And of course, we've touched on her music since then here and there, all of which lead up to the release of this newest project, Hex. And good news for anybody who might think 4 hours of DJ Sabrina is a bit too much at once, this one is actually more concise, coming in at a runtime of, 2 hours. Listen, it's a damn great 2 hours, you fucking cowards! So, like I said, if I had to pick a way to kind of, like, describe the overall mood of the record, it's like this... It's almost kind of like this nostalgic soundtrack montage to the most fun nights you've ever had in your life. Like, just think like that. To give some further context, in addition to, like, house music and electronic influences from the likes of Aphex Twin and Daft Punk even, she's also very heavily influenced by, like, Plunderphonics, and tends to sample from, like, stuff like late 80s, early 2000s TV shows and her work, amongst, like, all other kinds of music, and... That kind of general nostalgic vibe hits strong on the album opener, Come In Carmen, with the very bright, shimmering synths, the hi-hats and thumping kicks, the very lush choir vocal samples. It's all very warm and inviting and just an absolute bop. And then immediately after that, we get what's probably my favorite individual track on the record, This Station, which kind of has like this drum and bass percussion rhythm to it. This really catchy vocal refrain of "This station will rule the nation," or maybe ruin the nation, something like that. With this gradual layering of you know, catchy club synths into this really, really catchy melody, complete with woodwind accentuations, repeatedly vamping on that for the full like 6 minute runtime. It's so good. It's really good. And like, okay, I won't describe every track in detail here because again, 2 hours. But I will say that, like, every track is definitely its own memorable flavor of a dance floor jam, from the energetic four-on-the-floor kick and grooving bass and bouncy synths of Come Find Out, to the more gentle, serene, ballad-like feel of Stronger Together, to the grooving R&B shuffle of The One Love, the brass horns on Carnival, as well as kind of, like, the Discovery-era Daft Punk-style feeling to some of the vocal production on that track. All of it is great stuff. The melodies are great. The beats are super catchy. The production manages to be very, like, full and maximalist without ever feeling like it's overbearingly so. And at the end of the day, I can very much say this is the absolute best kind of dance record, because it is an album that absolutely compels you to groove and dance through sheer force of will alone. Especially if we're talking, like, the album's longest track, Deep Down, which is a good 12 and a half minutes, the most overtly house-influenced song on the record. But, like, seriously, even if, like, long records aren't your thing, even if this surpasses whatever metrics you might have in terms of track length or just overall length, I beg you to give this thing a listen if you love dance music. It's worth every second of your time. It is supremely good. Brat summer is over. Hex fall is here. And if you're feeling exceptionally spicy, there was recently a expanded version that came out earlier this month called Standalones of Hex that runs at 3 hours and 4 minutes long. Because goddamn, what makes an album better than getting a Lord of the Rings style director's cut for, you know, dance music? it's DJ Sabrina's World, and we're all dancing in it. Alright, now that's all the big stuff I want to get out of the way. Now let's shuffle into more of the quick round type stuff. Stuff that's pretty good, but I don't have too much to expand on, so... Back in 2023, there was a concert film that premiered at the Venice Film Festival, this being Ryuichi Sakamoto's Opus, documenting the final piano recital and live performance given by the late Ryuichi Sakamoto. This performance was in 2022, by the way, after many struggles with cancer, as well as having not performed live for years prior to that point. And while I don't know if the concert film itself is available anywhere, I do know that the audio recording was released on, you know, streaming and stuff in the past month or so. And as you can expect from that description and context, it's a very haunting and beautiful listen, something that successfully manages to evoke these very somber emotions just through a single piano, as it documents the last musical moments of one of Japan's most seminal and influential musicians. Then there's, of course, the new Uniform album, American Standard. You know you're in for a good, noisy, abrasive time when the album is 40 minutes long, it's only 4 tracks, and the entire first half of the record is taken up by the album opener. Get plenty of, that alone gives you a lot of good stuff from abrasively, you know, abrasive vocal call and responses, a lengthy droning series of distorted guitars and melodic bells that almost feel like a more, even heavier modern take on, like, Swans. The other 3 tracks are, of course, also pretty good, mixing in varying degrees of the ear-splitting tremolo guitars, the absolutely brittle, gravelly vocals, the thick bass lines, relentless pummeling drum grooves, all that good stuff. Of course, we got this new King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard record, Flight B741, a much more back-to-basics blues rock sort of record that calls back to... Think like Allman Brothers in terms of stylistic influence, and it makes for a pretty fun jam-laden listen if you want something that's more straightforward from the band and not coded in, like, weird concepts or oddball genre shifts. Of course, the new Dark Tranquility album, you know, Endless Signals, it is, again, another Dark Tranquility record, reliably heavy, reliably melodic, and at times kind of sounds like Death Clock in certain spots. And then for my last quick pick, this is one that I actually left off the formal list proper because I kind of just wanted to see what everyone's reaction is once I bring up the artist name. So I found out about this pretty solid EP called Fleur by a producer named DJ Gex 3D.
What?
Now, you might be wondering, who the hell is that? Well, this is a music alias used by a man named Sean Shaunson. And if you don't know who that is, he's an Irish gaming YouTuber whose specialty niche of choice is the PS1 library. And there's a lot of interesting videos if you've ever wanted to dive more into it. He frequently, like I said, he specializes in stuff like obscure and forgotten games from the console, the Japan-only side of the PS1 library, and even full, like, rundowns of various developers' outputs on the system. In fact, his most recent video that I recall being a 6.5-hour dive into every single Capcom game that they developed and produced on the PlayStation 1. And I bring this up because this is an electronic, you know, house EP that when you listen to it, it definitely sounds like it's made by someone who very thoroughly understands the classic gray gaming machine through and through. From, like, the thumping kicks and bass to a lot of the scratchier accentuations and even some industrial elements, the choppy vocal samples, and more lush singing. Again, this is, if you're really into just peak PS1 era soundtrack music and just kind of that era of electronic in general, give this EP a listen, and go subscribe to Sean Shaunson on YouTube. Shameless plug, sure, but he makes pretty good stuff, so I recommend it. And now for my one lowlight on the list, which is gonna sound weird calling it a lowlight, because I don't think it's a... Like, remember, the last time I did a lowlight was fucking Bring Me the Horizon. This is not Bring Me the Horizon tier bad. But it is still head-scratching. Like... Okay, I swear to God there was a point when Leprous was good. Like, really good. In fact, I can tell you the last album that I really solidly enjoyed from them was Melina back in 2017. Hell, I reviewed it during the first year or so of this website existing in text form. But the last couple of records have kind of fallen into this really weird zone where, again, they're not incompetent, but they haven't really moved the needle in terms of really exciting me like they used to. And this new project, Melodies of Atonement, is not really that different. The album opener, the single Silently Walking Alone, is still kind of weird to listen to. Like, it feels more janky than anything else, with kind of the sparse drum rhythm with really oddly placed ghost notes, maintaining that weird momentum as it kind of switches from, you know, hushed quiet verses to sort of the big explosions of the guitars and synths, trying to balance all that out but never quite getting there. Hell, that's kind of like the main songwriting wavelength of the record as a whole. The songs tend to bounce back and forth between these softer melodic sections of sparse drums, low humming synths, the melodic vocals, and these kind of lighter guitar passages, eventually swelling into these more bigger dramatic chorus bits. And like, again, I'm not calling this record shit. None of it is like actively incompetent in a Bring Me the Horizon sort of way. It's more frustrating than anything else. Like, you can see where there might have been good songwriting ideas and satisfying payoffs, but it just never really hits the kind of highs that it wants to. Like with the song Atonement, for example, that groove, in theory, should absolutely kill. But there's just something really silly sounding about the weird stuttering guitar lick that's playing over it in the chorus. There's also My Spectre, which sounds really awkward with the kind of sparse drum grooves it's trying to lay out. And, okay, to give the album a little bit of credit, like, the parts I do like, I still maintain that, like a Sunken Ship is the song that works the best for me. At least I think in terms of how it shifts from the verse to the big dramatic gravitas of the chorus, at least it kind of feels like it nails that solidly. And yes, that's even factoring in the weird la-la-la-la-la vocals, which I'm aware Alex over there was not a big fan of. But I also gotta give an additional nod to Faceless, where it, like, manages to have, like, this sort of decently satisfying groove with a lot of the heavy syncopations and more energetic drumming that definitely works a lot better. Again, overall, though, I'm just not really sure, like, like I said, I can see where there might have been these pockets of solid ideas and even what the big picture would be, but I feel like some of this might have needed more time to bake in the oven.
So basically, it's not terrible, it's just not great.
Yeah, it's like about as 5/6 out of 10 maybe as I could think.
Yeah.
Well, at least not another, you know, starting of a trilogy of bad albums that things up during the summer.
No one on this album thinks about watching Evangelion while high on ketamine, so that's a point in its favor. So, yeah, that basically about does it for all my stuff. That'll about put an end to the roundup as a whole. Again, as always, we will have a playlist down in the description of the albums that we do recommend listening to and the ones that we do like. Of course, be sure to follow us on Twitter at SurrealRezzo. Be sure to visit the website SurrealResolution.com for written articles, this podcast, podcast O&A, all of that good stuff. Be sure to, you know, jump into our Discord so you can always be immediately notified whenever new stuff goes up on the site. And yeah, that just about concludes this month's album roundup. We'll, of course, be back next month with a September album roundup and with more of the usual weekly business. We got a pretty big looking episode next time. So, yeah, until then, peace out.